Graeme, you make mention of grasslands. How would you describe a grassland? Like, well, you know, there's a paddock full of grass, but you mentioned the word bonsai. But so how would you describe a good grassland in your system, the way you would be training people?
Yeah, well, what I've been saying is that we don't have enough species for stability. So I have a real focus on perennial grasses. So I've been saying somewhere between 35 and 70 perennial grass species you need over the whole landscape. When some of the early settlers came through from Horsham down to Hamilton, they counted 37. John Robertson counted 37 in this environment. So, and most of them were summer growing. So we've lost most of the good summer growing grasses. We're left with a lot of the what I say, low successional, but very low palatability, very coarse native grasses. So there's this grassland, if I can sort of try and picture it, I could do it with my hands. It would have 100% ground cover with litter composting over the whole soil surface. So a very stable litter layer. On the top of it, have fresh leaves, fresh yellow-coloured litter, and then as you dive your hands down towards the soil surface, it'd start to get into that composting brown colour, into a very humified layer into the soil. Getting up high, you would have ground covers and legumes, probably less than 10% legumes, and they'd be trellising up through the perennial grasses, and you'd have you know, that many different species of perennial grass that you basically couldn't count them all. And it would have structure and function. You'd have seedlings of perennial grasses, and so seedlings, young plants and mature plants. So you'd have a range of ages. You'd have this massive, when these grasslands are going well, you can almost hear them humming with the amount of photosynthesis going on. We need a lot of biomass, so it'd be very, very deep. When we had the 06-07 no rainfall sort of through spring here, we ended up with grasslands that covered the top of the four-wheel motorbike by the end of that, and that's what we used so that we didn't have to feed to go through the summer of 06-07, so that we didn't have to feed, and we came out and the land was still in good, healthy condition, and we still had our animals, and it cost us nothing. So we basically lost a little bit of income, but nothing else happened. So the land got better. We actually got new species in. It favoured some of the summer-growing grasses. We got to use the land pretty well and put lots of litter back onto the soil surface. And basically it was low work, whereas a lot of people I was also working with, you know, they'd put them in drought lots, they'd lost several hundreds of thousands of dollars buying feed for them, and their land got worse. So we need to flip that around. That's only, it's not the, as George Taylor, who's the treasurer for Stipe, would say, it wasn't the drought that killed the grasses, it was the sheep and the manager that killed the grasses. So we need to learn those skills. They're not easy, you know, and it's incredibly dynamic agriculture. I think it's the hardest thing that anyone does, and we need to sort of make it, you know, like sort of how do we get those skills so that we can survive the high rainfall, low rainfall, and variation in seasons. And my model for that is that it's going to be a low input, moderate production, high profit, incredibly stable system.
But the point I just heard you say, which I'd like to sort of bring emphasis to this, that point, is that when the drought's sort of finished, well, in 06-07, when it finished in 07 or 08 when it actually finished, your ground, you said it was actually better than, well, it got more species, your ground was better. So that's one heck of a good starting point for a farmer to be at that point. So would you like to elaborate on that, how that would have happened on other people's farms, another example somewhere, perhaps?
Yeah, I worked with a guy, well, I worked with a lot of people during the drought in New South Wales. They seemed to go longer than ours, and and continue on. It started earlier and was a bit harder, I think. But what some people learned very quickly was that you had to design enterprises that were incredibly flexible, so that if you have a, like one of the guys I'm thinking of has got a merino stud, and he keeps the stud at about 30 to 40% of his carrying capacity because he never wants to hook into it, and he won't. He's very reluctant to sell his stud animals. So he keeps them at a level that will not, will not damage the whole business. And then he works out, well, what's the safety valve and how does he make profit out of the other percentage? So he has sort of a, he has a merino stud, but he also trades cows and calves. And I said to him, well, how do you do that? How do you trade the cows and calves? And he goes, well, I don't like them. And I thought that was a real, that was a real insight. So he'd be happy if they'd gone last week. So as soon as the season starts to change, he's immediately adjusting his stocking rate at a profit. So the key is to have animals there that will be able to be sold at a profit. You've got to have systems in place so that you know what the carrying capacity is going to be, and adjust quickly. So we picked up in July in 06 that the season wasn't running true to course because we had a plan of where we had to be in which paddocks. So all I did was then say, hang on a minute, what's happening? And started looking at it. And they were all, that was all forecast that that we were going into a low rainfall period and there was a risk of drought. So then we monitored for that and we adjusted the stocking rate early in July, August, so that we made sure that we then had enough feed. So other people are able to do this. And there's an area over between Sale and south of the highway there between Sale and Bairnsdale that's having a terrible season this year. And I've been working with the people over there, me being warden, and they are actually adjusting their stocking rate now because they know what the season's going to be. So I just say to people, well, with your current mob or your current or your stock, when does the feed run out? We can estimate basically how long the growing, the non-growing season, the summer's going to be. Between that, up at Horsham, you know, they stop growing in November and May, it comes back in May, June. So they know that it's about that 6 months. You know, you can estimate, well, how long before they eat all the feed here and also leave the ground covered and leave the stable litter layer. And then you can adjust now so that, yeah, like people could be adjusting now for this summer to make sure that they adjust at a profit, but also that by winter next year they've still got their land getting better. So it's that management process and helping people step through that that's the secret for managing the land. But it comes back to the original enterprise design, that it's got that flexibility and profitability built into it, basically.